Pusho nen den away magani duk. Beshiko benesia kwe indigo. Mang and do dame. Ga osa squatch me cog and dunjaba. Ga misqua wako cog ninda. Elaine Fleming indition a cause. And my colonized name is Elaine Fleming. And my Ojibwe name is One Thunderbird Woman. Beshiko benesia kwe. And that's the name that my elder Mezenanaquid told me the universe knows me by. Beshiko Benesi Akwe. And I'm with the Loon Clan, and I am a member of Ga Osisquajimekog, the Leech Lake, where there were big leeches. And I live in Ga Miskwawakokog, the place where there were red cedar trees. And now, We don't find those red cedar trees because of the timber industry that came and chopped down and clear cut our forests and started in 1906 that first federal forest that was experiential in nature, in that you would plant the trees. In particular, they would plant white pine. Some white pine. They would plant red pine in particular. Norway pine that grows quickly, and then they can cut those and sell it and make cash off of them. And then they would replant. And that's our Chippewa National Forest. That's why you go down the road and and you'll see those straight rows of trees. And that's because they were planted just like your row of carrots or your row of onions in your gitiga, in your garden. So I want to welcome you to History of Leech Lake. Yeah, this is my home, and I love it here. I traveled a long time, many years, after I graduated from Cass Lake High School. But I always came home on my vacations. And I know, I always knew I would end up here because this is where my family is. This is where my people are. And this is where the land is that I come from and where my people are buried. So, buju minawa. Hello again. So I've been talking about Bagunagishik School and about that walkout of the Catholic High School by 80 students back in 1975 because of racism. And I was talking about a group of concerned parents who formed, and they called themselves Concerned Parents of Indian Students. And so it was a time of self-determination and standing up for our rights in the 70s. And that's what these parents were doing because of the racism in the school system and in the city of Cass Lake. And the surrounding area, they're standing up for our students. And these students walked out of Cass Lake High School and walked over to the teen center. And they began their school with their first two teachers, Mike Schmidt and Rose Gogolai. And so this group, Concerned Parents of Indian Students, at the time, our elder Shirley LaDuke Fisher said they were considered militant. But they didn't consider themselves militant. They were activists and who were standing up for their students in a good way. And so I related some of the history about the American Indian Movement, in particular Dennis Banks, Clyde Belcourt, and Eddie Benton Benet, and about how they said that the American Indian Movement was not militant either, and it was based on spirituality. And so in 1970, the American Indian Movement, they came to Cass Lake to support the reservations hunting, fishing, and gathering of manum and wild rice, our rights to do that and to regulate those rights, those activities on our own Ishkonikan, this reservation. So our right to hunt, fish, and gather on the reservation goes back to the beginning of time. Any people must support themselves, and they must feed themselves. In our migration story, we were told to come to the place where food grew on the water. That's what we did. And in the 1855 treaty, boundaries were created that encircled our Ishkonikan, our reservation. And our reservation is 50% water. You know that as you travel. You travel down Highway 2 and you go over Cass Lake and you go through the swamps. You go by Winnipegosis and also the road that leads down to Leech Lake, where a people that have our reservation has so much water on it. And the Mississippi River runs through it also. So treaties were made with the understanding that indigenous American people would be able to support themselves from the natural resources of their designated land territories. We are water people. We survive by gathering wild rice. We eat it and we sell and trade it to support ourselves economically. We have ceremonies around it. It is a sacred food available at every ceremony that we have, such as naming ceremonies. We even have ceremony for the rice before we go out on the lakes or rivers for the first time each fall. We have that ceremony. Then there's the fish. We are fish eaters. For the older Ojibwe, white fish were our favorite fish. We also ate a lot of tulibi. In Anigam and the Leech Lake Agency, written by Renee Giving and Cecilia McKeague, it's written that in 1781, the Ojibwe had taken possession of the Leech Lake. Our people there were called pillagers, and the pillagers were known as the bravest band of the tribe, according to William W. Warren. According to McKeegan Gaving, the explorer Schoolcraft estimated that the pillagers numbered about 800 in 1832, and Jean Nicolet estimated that there were about 1,000 pillagers in 1836. Then in 1851, according to an annuity list, the pillagers numbered about 1,250. 300 of the 1,250 pillagers included 300 men who, quote, were capable of bearing arms, end quote. These were the pillagers who resided around Leech Lake, and they were the ones who were involved in the Battle of Sugar Point, that last official war with Indigenous Americans and the United States government. It's obvious that in keeping track of Indigenous Americans, it's important to know how many are men and can carry arms. I was watching the powwow up in Manoam, in the Mother's Day powwow on Saturday, and a Miguana, eagle feather, it had fallen to the ground. It was one of the black-tipped feathers. And so they called out four warriors, male warriors, to dance for that miigwan. And we were watching them, and how beautiful that was. And I told my grandsons, Gee Wade and Anaquet, I said, look here, this is what used to happen, you see. We used to battle with the cavalry, the U.S. soldiers, way back in the long time ago. And if we ever dropped anything during that battle, any part of the clothing or the weapons that we were carrying, we had to stop and we had to pick them up. Because when something fell on the ground, and if the enemy found it, then they would know where we were at. And so it was important to pick up that miigwan. And also, I'd also listened to another man. He had been talking. He was an elder man, and he was talking about one time he saw an eagle staff. It fell down, and nobody picked it up. And so this old grandma, she went over there, and she picked up that eagle staff. And when she picked it up, she waited, and she held it until one of the male warriors came and took care of it. And the old lady said that During times of war, if the staff fell, it didn't matter. It had to be picked up. And even if it was a child would have to pick it up, and then it'd have to carry it forward into battle, because that's how important it was to be taking care of your people. And so I shared that with my grandsons so they'd understand why it was important to pick up that miquan. So I'll continue talking about our hunting and fishing rights and AIM coming to town in the 1970s to Gamasqua, Waco, Cog, a place where there were red cedar trees. Miigwech bizandawi yeg. Thank you for listening. Mi'iu.